The plan was for Ray Brewer and Mike Grimala to get in here and dissect the UNLV basketball team's game against Duke, because there would be a lot to talk about. Turns out, not so much. A 49-point loss on Saturday. The good point of them holding off on talking about it is now I get to be here. I'm Case Kiefer alongside the aforementioned Ray and Mike. Brewer, you were so excited about this game all offseason. You talked about this for months, so I want to give you the first word. I can't think it lived up to your expectations. I know you didn't think UNLV had a chance, but 49 points, that's rough.
Yeah, I think if you take the game as a whole, you know, the tip-off and the 40 minutes of game time, yeah, it was a bit of a downer. UNLV lost by 49 points. They were thoroughly outplayed. They looked like a high school team compared to the best team in the nation. But if you look at the day, in terms of, you know, the buzz outside the arena before the game, I took the monorail over. A lot of people for both sides in their Rebel Red or Duke Blue, and I think having a chance to talk to people and reminisce about, you know, those back-to-back Final Four games, that made the day fun. Of course, the outcome wasn't what UNLV fans wanted or what I had envisioned growing up here. And, of course, you know, our natural reaction is to compare the two programs and how one has thrived and the other has slid. And that's fair, and that's what we'll do. But in terms of just the pageantry of the game and being on ESPN and, you know, even afterwards people run – I mean, Duke traveled so well, and I'm sure it wasn't necessarily only fans from North Carolina. It's a national brand. And, you know, Dick Vitale, love him or hate him, very popular fans, people lining up to take pictures with them. So outside of the game, it was cool.
Yeah, like you said, everything that went around with it, the buzz leading up to it was great. I sort of question whether how much of that is UNLV and how much of it is just unique to that one matchup with Duke this one time, because it's been 25 years since that game. If they get, you know, say – Arizona or another team out there for a showcase game like that, is it the same amount of buzz? I don't think it would be. Not until UNLV starts generating some of it from their own side with good play. But I did think as a whole it was good. It's a good example of UNLV being able to schedule a team like that, even though they're not ready to play teams like that.
And even though the current coach didn't make the schedule, but yeah.
Yeah. He didn't. I mean, I would assume they'll try to continue to play some type of non-conference schedule. That's a little bit challenging. So you should see teams like that coming in, maybe not to the level it is this year where you're playing, you know, 3-4 games like that. There's not much you can take away from the actual game itself. They lost by 50. So you go to the entire experience.
But before we break down the team and the game, let me ask you this general question. So recruiting, obviously the only way to get the program to be better is to get better players. And I'd argue that, you know, getting to play at T-Mobile Arena in a big showcase like that would be an opportunity to attract some recruits. It could be a selling point. But then you lose by 50. Does that kind of hurt yourself at the same time?
You never want to lose a game by that much on national TV. But I really don't think wins and losses – like that resonates so much with the players as much as everything else that goes into recruiting does. Just the fact that UNLV can get Duke to come to Las Vegas to play that game, you look on a regional level. You're trying to compete in the Mountain West. How many other Mountain West teams can get Duke to come to their city to play them? Maybe San Diego State? I don't think Duke.
They have an awful time scheduling San Diego State. Yeah.
So just that fact is that's a positive sign for UNLV that they can get Duke, they can get Kansas. So recruiting, that definitely helps you if you're recruiting at the Mountain West level. You can beat out the rest of the Mountain West for recruits, but you already knew that. On a national level, I think you're selling kids more on playing time, or at least under the previous staff, is playing time. We can get you to the NBA. We'll give you some freedom, that type of stuff. I think that plays well with kids even more so than, you know, and we can compete in this league more so than, oh, we lost that game by 50. That looked really bad.
Yeah. I mean, I think with any recruit, you could go in their living room and be like, listen, we suck. You have a chance to come in and play 30 minutes a game and touch the ball 100 times. I mean, there's not one spot where they can't upgrade and be better, in my humble opinion, if you watch the game.
I mean, yeah, it's hard to argue against because this really was, and I agree with, I think, everything you guys have said. I think that especially just one loss this bad, I don't think it's going to kill you in recruiting. I mean, you don't want to look like that. You want to look like a more respectable program. But I also just think this is such a crazy margin that I don't think you can just really swipe it under the rug and be like, well, we always expected to lose. I mean, you're a 24-point dog. You lost by double that. So I guess from you guys who were there up close and personal, I just want to ask you, from your own eyes, when that was a game, I mean, what went wrong to make it get this lopsided, this poorly? I mean, the first thing that jumped out on the box score to me is that UNLV shot better from three than two, which is you don't see that often.
It was a mismatch. Physically, like, you can tell that Duke was just bigger and quicker and longer and more athletic at just every position. I thought that Dwayne Morgan was could match the physicality of Duke. I didn't think anyone else on UNLV could really match up with that, this, their level of just how quick and how fast and athletic they were. And they just got engulfed. Like, as you said, they shot better from three than they did from two. Even when they could get inside, they're just overwhelmed by the length of Duke. We saw a couple plays where, you know, Poizer penetrated and where he would usually get to the basket and make a play. This time he's shooting over, you know, two players who are, you know, trying to block his shot, who are longer and getting up higher than he is. We saw, I think it was Mooring who penetrated on one play, and then he tried to throw a kick-out pass, a hook pass over the top, and the Duke defender just reached up and grabbed it because he's just so long and athletic, and they went the other way for a fast break. They were just overmatched at every level, and that's, as the game went on, it just became worse and worse.
And Grayson Allen, I mean, that Duke is a player who is, you know, a great college player in Grayson Allen, and just watching how efficient he moved around the court and how he seemed to always be in, I mean, he had 34 points, but it seemed like every time he got the ball, he was in a position to score and not, you know, break a sweat doing so. It seemed like he was either A, so good that he was always open, or B, their offense was just so crisp that no matter what happened, transition, in the full court, whatever it was, that they were getting the ball to their scorer in knockdown jumper type of stuff.
They have the best offense in the country by pretty much every measure, and that they just have so many good offensive players. Allen may be the best of them. He was on that day. But, yeah, their offense is so good, and UNLV was a team that they could dominate defensively as well just because of the physical matchups. So when you have a team that's, you get the best offense in the country, and they can also stop UNLV pretty easily themselves, that's where you end up with that huge exploding margin of victory.
Yeah, and I think when we're trying to learn about this year's UNLV team, guys, you look at, okay, so say, for example, they played an exhibition game against New Mexico Highlands, right? Mm-hmm. Dominated them, right, for all intents and purposes. You didn't learn anything about UNLV that day because the opponent, it was such a mismatch of the opponent. Same token, I don't think you learned anything about UNLV Saturday when they played Duke, right? I mean, it's such a mismatch. They're not going to play anybody up to that caliber in league play. I mean, San Diego State maybe to a certain extent. But for me, I just think that Duke is a team from a Power 5 conference. UNLV is a team from, you know, a mid-major that, you know, every 10 years they may get a good run together. And that's the current state of UNLV basketball, as crappy as it sounds.
So then this week, do we learn anything about UNLV? They have Incarnate Word at home, I believe, Wednesday night, then going to Portland to play Oregon. What do you guys think? What's the outlook for this week? I mean, these seem like two games that the result should be pretty clear-cut, too, I guess.
Incarnate Word is a D1 team.
As we learn.
You look at their KenPom ranking. I'm looking at it right now, the 267, which is basically a third-tier Mountain West team. So they're probably on that level of, you know, an Air Force or a team like that. So, I mean, that's the caliber of team. They're closer to the type of team UNLV is going to be playing than much more representative than Duke.
Yeah, and for me, I think what's important Wednesday is how do they respond to a 49-point loss? You know, how are they mentally? It's tough to lose like that in front of 19,000 fans, the largest crowd to watch a college game in this city in 20-some years, on national TV, and to rebound, to come back home, to play an opponent whose name you probably don't know, and to get up for that. So mentally, how is this team going to approach the game? I think we'll learn a lot about, you know, the coaching staff, the players. The one thing to their credit all year, this is a team, to me, that has given a pretty good effort every week. They seem like they're all in, and that's all you could ask in what's essentially a throwaway year, as we've said.
Yeah, I mean, it's this game. It's hard to say about this game, but it's really you can't lose it. Coming off that Duke game, looking ahead to who they've got coming up, you can't. This is a game that you pretty much have to put in the win column. You've got to.
Yeah, this is Idaho.
Yeah, you've got to get everyone on the same page this week. You've got, you know, 2 days of practice. You've got to bring them together, get that game, that Duke game, in the rearview mirror, and this game has to be a win. And so that the biggest thing is going to be getting everyone's head straight and getting their attitude on this game focused on Incarnate Word.
Yeah, and once that game's in the book, then you could fast forward to Saturday. Okay, now you've got another marquee opponent. You're playing in a pretty Portland. I mean, pretty cool city, right?
Yeah, NBA arena. Like, yeah, that's gonna be a big deal.
Another chance to prove that you're better than a 49-point loss.
I mean, we got to expect that game's going to be a little closer, right? Oregon's not on Duke's level. They struggled early in the year. I think they're on a winning streak now. But, you know, are you going to be, as you just did, kind of going into it, juxtaposing what happens against Oregon, what happens to Duke, trying to get some signs of progress out of that?
I mean, to me, that's the only fair thing. I think it's unfair to be critical of anybody with UNLV basketball this year. I mean, you go back to – I mean, we've heard the narrative 1,000 times, but you go back to what happened in the offseason. He had 3 players, and the signing period was over. How are you going to – you got to take basically what's left and try to form a team out of it. And he did that. He got enough players to form a team, and this is what's going on. So, for me, as long as they compete hard – keep showing improvements. We were talking, Mike and I, offline a few days ago, that if you look at 2 players, Dwayne Moore, I mean, look at the 3 players, forget the 2 players, the 3 players that were here last year. Green, who we saw in an exhibition game, Dwayne Morgan, and Poyser, right? All 3 of those guys are clearly improved players from last year to this year. And for me, that's a sign that maybe somebody in that building knows how to coach.
Yeah, and I think that's what gives you hope for – I mean, all you can grade Menzies on is the job that he's done from, you know, May to now. And the clearest sign in terms of personnel is with those 3 guys, because those are the only 3 guys he's had since then. So you look at the leap that Poyser has taken from his freshman year to his sophomore year. If Menzies can get – Troy Baxter to take a similar leap next year, or Sheknet Dembele to take a similar leap from his freshman season. If you can get that kind of improvement, or if Sheknet Dembele can make the kind of improvement in this upcoming offseason that Dwayne Morgan has made over the last offseason,
now you're in like Flynn.
Yeah, now you've got a pretty good rotation that you can probably use to compete in the Mountain West, and then if you can start adding, you know, better recruits onto the bottom of that coming in as your next wave. Then you're pretty good. So I think that the improvement is probably the biggest positive so far that you've got from Menzies.
Am I too hard on Troy Baxter?
Yes. It's 9 games into his freshman year.
Okay, because
it just started.
He showed up like a week before the season started. Like, his suitcases are probably still not unpacked.
I know. I he's like our most celebrated recruit right now, right?
He is, a top 100.
I mean, there's been some unbelievable recruits all across college basketball that just look so bad at the beginning of their college career and turn out to be
I know
all-American. So I'm not worried about him yet.
I'm not patient. I'm a Rebel fan. I want immediate gratification.
I mean, I can't believe – I feel like this podcast after a 50-point loss is more positive than some of the things we talked about preseason. I'm not necessarily saying I would disagree with anything you guys say. It's just kind
Casey,
of a funny thing.
I feel bad for them. It's like little babies out there getting stomped on.
No, I understand.
Tarzan.
It's just an observation. And one more positive that I would add. I know this is going to harken back to football, and that didn't really turn out all that well. But, I mean, the league looks really bad. So, is there anyone that really strikes like great fear into you once they get into this conference play?
I haven't been covering the league that long. I mean, this is my fifth season covering the Mountain West, but this is as bad by far as it's ever seen. It's a one-bid league. Like, you can put that
for sure. I feel like
right
even
now.
Some of the other down years, it would be like, oh, well, we could still probably sneak in too. Like, this year,
there's no chance.
I mean, no one's any good, and I just feel like. I feel like if UNLV would have had one of these years where everything is against them, you mentioned the circumstances we've talked about a million times. I mean, think if they had this like 5 or 6 years ago, they would be getting just destroyed on a nightly basis, and I feel like that's not going to be the case once they get into league play.
Well, the thing is that the league tournament, if you qualify to play in the quarters, is 3 games on your home court in 3 days against, with the exception of San Diego State, 3 teams that you're eerily similar to. Now, it's not much of a home court advantage because UNLV fans aren't going to show up. There's going to be, 2,300 on Wednesday?
Yeah, if you match up with New Mexico, New Mexico is going to have more fans than you at that.
And they're bad. They lost to New Mexico State by 15 points.
And you can say that about a few Mountain West teams. They'll bring more fans to the game than UNLV probably for that first game in the Mountain West tournament.
But you're familiar with the rims. You're familiar with the city. I mean, I'd rather have the tournament in Las Vegas than Denver, where it was for a few years.
I mean, makes sense. It's hard to disagree with, although, I mean, I feel like we've been preaching this for years and years, and we really haven't had any results to show out for it.
Again, you're right. The Rebels are not that good right now. They weren't that good last year, but at least they had good players last year. I mean, look who they had in that tournament last year. McCaw, Zimmerman.
Like a hobbled Zimmerman who was just coming back from injury at the time.
Yeah.
Like
Ike Nwamko,
Ike Nwamko.
Yeah, name I couldn't say. I mean, the guy who parked cars at Venetian.
Brian Glenn. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
All right, well, who would have thought a year ago at this time that the Incarnate Word game on Wednesday would be such a big deal, but it looks like that's where we are. As you heard Mike and Brewer say, it's a must win. You got to show you can beat these types of teams in a kind of a sandwich spot here before they go take on Oregon over the weekend. We'll come back next week to talk about what happened. That's it for Ray and Mike. I'm Case.